meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
All right, good evening, everyone. We've got a big show ahead of us tonight. Wii Television, on April 15th, 10 o'clock Eastern, we'll have a episode of Exposed, and the title is Sexual Predators. We all know Stephanie Good as a author. Attorney. She's written books like Aruba. She's written books on the Duke lacrosse case and others. But the introduction on the Wii webpage says Stephanie Good is a grandmother. That's hard to believe. I didn't know that. A mother, an attorney, an author by day, and an internet crusader by night. And it's always nice to have Stephanie with us. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing great. Don't look like a grandmother in the picture I'm looking at.
I have 5 grandchildren.
I know. And you are doing great work. This is starting April 15th, 10 o'clock Eastern on Wii Television, Women Entertainment Television, obviously. You are going to be featured, and I've actually had a couple of emails or comments when folks knew that you were coming on the show or talking about your show, and one of the first questions that came out was doing this show, not my show, but the Exposed show, are you not jeopardizing what you've been doing? But really, when it comes down to it, these guys, you could be on shows every day of the week, and you're still going to catch lots of people, correct?
Absolutely. They don't know who I really am on the internet. You know, I mean, I can go on TV. I've written my book. I've been on a lot of news shows. But when these guys go online, they're just talking to someone they believe is a kid. They don't know. You know, I don't use my real name or my real picture online, so they never know.
Now, you're working with the FBI New York Crimes Against Children Squad. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, you know, the Crimes Against Children Squad, there are several types of squads like that around the country and with the FBI and also with local police departments
right. That
just go online and do exactly what I've been doing and sit there and make believe they're children and wait in chat rooms for guys or women to talk to them and to solicit them for sex and ask for a meeting sometimes they send, you know, child porn to certain people, and whatever they're doing that's illegal, then, you know, these squads can arrest them.
Now, you assume the identity of a young teenage girl, and that's great, but that's got to be tough. I've got teenage kids, and to be quite honest with you, I don't know what they're talking about sometimes when they're talking to me. They have a whole new language of their own, but yet you're able to get onto the internet, use the lingo, and I'm sure there's another term for it, but I'm going to use lingo because I'm old, and be able to assume that identity, and it works well. How tough is that? Did you have to work on that part of it?
No, because, you know, one of the things you're forgetting is that I'm talking to older people. I'm talking to a lot of people that range in age, usually from the 30s up to the 60s and older.
Good point.
They don't know the lingo any more than you do. So, like, it's pretty easy. It really is.
No. I understand what you're saying. And that's a good point. To assume the identity of a 13 or 14-year-old is something that I'm so impressed with, how you're able to do that. And something that I'm sure will be discussed on the show, and again, it'll be on Women's Entertainment WE channel, April 15th at 10 o'clock Eastern, and then there'll be some other dates, April 16th, 22nd, and 23rd. One of the things that you should be very proud of, you and the squad that you work with, is the 100% conviction rate. We don't see any Dateline fiascos when you are on the job.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And that's because when I do it, it's just cut and dry. There's no fine line that might be crossed. There's no entrapment issues. It's just so cut you know, cut and dry, very clear cut cases where I stay behind a line, so far behind a line that there's just no way a jury would ever let these guys go. What you see with Dateline is a whole different way of doing things, and I'm not especially comfortable with the way they do it. But one of the things that I do is, and which most law enforcement people do, is to go online and to sit in these chat rooms and not to instant message anybody first, not to talk about sex first, not to ever ask for a meeting first. You know, these are very important issues when it comes down to things like entrapment. You know, juries don't really always understand the true legal definition of things, and when they hear that somebody might have crossed the line just a little bit or might have gotten close to that line, some juries will vote to acquit. And so that's probably what you're seeing with Dateline. A lot of those guys don't even get they get arrested, but they don't get convicted. They don't [S2] Right. [S1] Go to court. They don't go to trial. But that's the kind of thing you will see with those kinds of cases. I never, even through a whole relationship with these guys, which can last for up to a year or more, [S2] Mm-hmm. [S1] I absolutely never, ever, during the whole time, say, okay, so, you know, when are we going to have sex? When right. are we going to meet? You know,
exactly.
It just doesn't happen. So it's so clear that these guys are pushing me. And most of the time I'm saying nothing more than, uh-huh, okay, cool, mm-hmm. yeah, I'd sure like to try that, yeah, mm-hmm. okay. And so, you know, as much as these guys go into court and their attorneys pound me on the witness stand and talk about how I lured them in, it's all there in black and white. The transcripts of the chats are there, the transcripts from the telephone calls. They actually hear the telephone calls that I have with these guys when they ask for a phone call. So there's really no defense with my cases. That's why they all get convicted.
I know CBS produced this for WE, the WE channel, I believe. What brought them to you? Obviously, you know, your story has been out in the media, your book exposed and other things, but it's about time that we saw another side of internet investigation rather than Dateline, and I don't mean to just pick on them tonight because we're not. That's not what this is about,
right.
But what brought them to you?
Actually, they just heard about me through some of the information my publicist was giving out.
Mm-hmm.
I think basically that's it. They heard about me, they saw my book, and they were very interested in producing this story.
How difficult was it, Stephanie, and if you're just tuning in, author, attorney, and internet crusader by night, Stephanie Good is here, and she's probably wanting to kick me every time I say that, but we're friends, and she knows that I'm very impressed with the work that she does. But how difficult was this, obviously, to have a camera stuck in your face? How long did it take to put the show together?
Well, just to give you an idea, I think the first 2 days or so of filming were probably thrown in the garbage.
Oh, really?
I really needed to get used to it. It wasn't easy.
No.
Because no matter how hard you try, it's very hard to be totally natural in front of cameras following you around. They did a lot of filming. They weren't quite sure what they were going to like, what they weren't going to like. And also, you know, they came out many times. I would venture to say there could be 75 hours or more of taping going into what really amounts to about 45 minutes with commercials. They took a lot of film in a lot of different places. And they also filmed, you know, the FBI agent who was the coordinator of the Crimes Against Children squad for most of the time that I've been working with them. He's on it. And they have some profilers on it. My husband and kids got onto the show, too. So, you know, it's a lot about me, you know, but it's also, you know, there are other people involved. And so they had to do a lot of editing to put it all together and make it look good.
You're an attorney, and going to court isn't probably an issue for you, but in these cases, when you've had to go and testify, and probably in a few cases, maybe you've even gone to the arrest scene, how does that, and I don't want you to give away the whole show, obviously, but how is that to handle? It's got to be somewhat satisfying to see them get arrested, even more satisfying to see them get convicted?
Oh, it's very satisfying for me to see them getting arrested. I have been to arrest scenes, and I have watched them put the handcuffs on these guys, and then I sit in court, and their attorneys do everything they can for days on end to discredit me. And, you know, they can't. So in the end, and these guys, they sit at the defense table, and they stare me down, and they give me all sorts of dirty looks, and they look like they're really full of themselves sometimes, like they think they're going to get off and all that. And, you know, it's very satisfying in the end when I hear them get sentenced to 5 years, you know, 8 years, whatever it is. And, it just feels really good, but, you know, that's because they're guilty. It's just so clear that they're guilty that I know from the minute I walk into the courtroom that's the way it's going to be. I know from the minute the cuffs go on them that either they're going to plead guilty or they're going to be convicted at trial.
It's difficult, I know, to comment because it's the system that we have is the best system that's out there. We're going to get into some specifics in a little while. But sentencing, you and I have talked many times on my program and done interviews and talked about minimum sentences and these types of sexual predators. Obviously, there's a rehabilitation issue or lack thereof. Are the courts doing a good job or could it be stronger? Should these guys be put away for a longer period of time?
I think that they need to be put away for a much longer period of time. You know, the recidivism rate is extremely high. These guys can't get cured. There's just no way around it. And the federal system is increasing the sentencing guidelines. Now the minimum for what I do with these guys, the minimum they're going to get is 10 years. And the maximum is actually life. Before this, it was 5 to 30. You know, so the federal system is increasing it, but honestly, and that's just for, you know, meeting someone you thought was a girl, you know, going, talking to them online and, you know, showing up at the scene, not even touching, a real child or talking to a real child. These guys are going to go away for a minimum of 10 years if they're convicted. So, you know, I see the federal system trying to be more strict. I worry more about the state, the county, you know, because there's so much leverage. The judges have just too much flexibility with sentencing. They don't even have to sentence the guy to jail. You know, there's no minimum sentencing guidelines there. And you see a lot of the same guys. I've had cases where I was working on, you know, the same exact issue, talking to people for a long time, and then they would go out, the guy, and meet somebody else, a real kid or a cop. Well, actually, I should take that back. They go out and they meet a cop, and they will get 6 months in jail or probation or something like that, whereas that same person, had they been taken in, you know, by the guys that I work with, would have gotten at the time a minimum of 5 years, now a minimum of 10 years. So I would like to see something more done, you know, on a local level.
You know, and that's a good question and a good point. When you just look at local levels and state levels, federal levels, the amount of manpower, the amount of resources that's being put into this, I'm sure that there are nowhere near enough investigators, enough internet crusaders, the civilians like yourself that are working with the police to cover this, because it's, you know, it could be 24/7 nonstop, could it not, or am I exaggerating?
Oh, no, you're not exaggerating. I always say that this is really an epidemic here. This is not, people don't really believe how bad it is. And it's bad. There's no given time of day or night that I cannot go on the internet and be bombarded by instant messages from adults seeking sex from children. It's just there constantly. It never ends. So, no, you're not exaggerating, Dana.
How do you, Steph, decide to work a case to start on something? Is it coordinated with the squad that you're working with, and all of a sudden
when I decide to work on a, you know, do a case, it's not really what I'm doing. It's really a matter of, before I would bring it to law enforcement, I would sit there and I would be instant messaged by someone, and I would wait until they get to the point where I'm very sure that they are an adult seeking sex from a child.
Right.
That there's no question. It's not going to be the first conversation I have with them. I'm going to wait. I'm going to make sure that it's not someone kidding around, even though that's inappropriate. But you never know what's going on the Internet, and I have to wait and make it real clear to myself before turning them over to anyone that they are truly, honestly seeking to have sex with a child and that they're an adult, you know.
If you're just joining us, our Stephanie Good is here April 15th, 10 o'clock Eastern on the Women's Entertainment Channel, an episode of Exposed Sexual Predators. Stephanie and people at the New York Crimes Against Children Squad with the FBI will be featured. And it's about time that something like this was done. Do you see more programs, or maybe you can't comment on that right now, Stephanie, of your work?
It's possible. It's very possible. But I'd also like to talk about the show, because it's not going to be like a Dateline. It's going to be actual... we're doing reenactments, for one thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, which is going to be very exciting. They're also showing me on the phone talking to the predators, and you're going to hear the real voices of the real predators that went away to jail, due to me. There are some parts of it are reenactments, but only on my end of it. These guys, the voices that you will hear, the pictures you will see, the people that you will see are the real sexual predators that I've put in prison. So it's really quite exciting. I think it's going to show something that people have not seen before.
And something that most people don't realize is that your typical internet predator is not the scary, greasy-haired character with three teeth and the rubber band wrapped around his arm with the needle stuck in there. He's just so desperate that no, we're talking about Fortune 500 people, people with wearing their Armani suits and live the so-called normal life during the day, but are internet freaks at night.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what I tell people, because these people, these predators, they live lives that are viewed as normal. You know, they could be your child's teacher, doctor, bus driver, they could be your next door neighbor. They could actually be someone under your own roof, unfortunately. And the ones I deal with, they're your child's new best internet friend, unfortunately. So you really never know. I've gotten some pretty powerful people. A lot of them are white-collar workers, professionals. It's really pretty disgusting. One guy I got worked with Sesame Street, HBO, and Nickelodeon doing children's things, So you have no idea.
Well, it's absolutely unbelievable. I'm not sure if you've been following another case that I'm covering about a young girl, Becca McAvoy, and we're going to talk to her dad, her real dad, later this evening. And it's just so sad that, if we can't protect children, then who can we protect? And the Internet, Stephanie, is such a conglomerate, such a huge thing right now that, when I go do lectures in schools and you ask kids at junior high level or even before that or high school level, it's 99.9% of these kids have been on the Internet, are on the Internet 3 to 6 hours or more sometimes a day, chatting, doing everything possible. It has taken over where the kids used to go out and have a game of ball. Now they sit on MSN, and who knows what's going to happen.
That's true. And, one of the really bad things about that is the more time they spend on the Internet, the more they meet people and then after a while think that they have a new friend, that they start to really trust people that they're talking to. It's a real fantasy world on there, because you really don't know. You just have no idea. Unless it's somebody you really know on the outside, in the outside world, who has given you their screen name, and you're sure that's the person you're talking to, you have no idea who you're talking to. And that is really symbolized by some of the some of the information that's being given out at the schools where they do have organizations that are going around to the schools to give lectures, and I was invited to watch one a couple of weeks ago. And they, I don't know if you've seen it because it's been around the internet, where they show this picture of a young child on the, you know, a teenager on the internet talking to someone, and then they show who the other person is and what they're saying, and the other person is saying, I'm 15 years old, and you see this big, huge, you know, bald-headed, half-naked man sitting on the other end there who's you know, saying that they're a 15-year-old kid, and he's about 500 pounds, and, you know, and it just kind of, the kids all looked pretty shocked. They just don't get it. They don't get how simple it is for anybody to get on the internet and have a fake picture. And that's something that I try to impress on people, because that's exactly what I do. You know, I get on the internet with a fake picture and a fake profile and a fake name, and I really, you know, these guys believe it. I actually trick these older men and women into believing they're talking to a kid. So imagine how easy it is for them to manipulate a kid. That's the worrisome part of it.
Why is it? Why are youth of today, mainly girls too, I hate to say it, but is it that they're, you know, is it because of the allure of talking to someone? You think you're making a new friend? Is it the craving for friendship? Is it what is it that draws them to these people? Is it a social problem, a social mechanism that if somebody talks to you on the internet, well, you have to respond? I know I've got after my own kids and say, okay, that's enough. Time's up. You're off. Well, I have to say goodbye, you know, and then it takes 10 minutes to say goodbye. I know they're yanking my chain by doing that, because they're still typing away, and it's not just the internet, it's the cell phones with the text messages. You know, I tried to send a text message once and to say hello, I got $3 signs and a 4, and I didn't know what I was doing. But these kids, the technology today, they're grasping it, they know what to do with it, and they're obsessed with it, and I don't think I'm exaggerating there either.
No, I don't think you are. I think one of the things, you know, if this is their thing, this is their technology of their time, and one of the lures for them with the sexual predators is that these guys will find out what their vulnerability is. If, you know, that's what they do with me. They come on and they talk to me and they get to know me a little bit, and they want to know, you know, who I live with, who's in my family, what kind of a house I live in, what do I like to do, what do I want for my birthday, you know, and they start to hear things like, you know, if I say, oh, I don't have a cell phone, my mom won't let me have one, or if I say I really would love a pair of boots, you know, the next time we're talking, right away it's going to be, you know, how about if I send you a cell phone, or how about if I take you shopping and buy you those boots. And I've had guys who told me that they teach acting lessons, and that they put on shows in Manhattan, and that they could easily give me free lessons and get me into a Broadway show. So if you, and they do it slowly, a lot of them, you know, it's not like the first conversation where they're throwing this all at you. They do it slowly, they get to know the child, and they get to know exactly what that child really wants and can't get from their parents, and that's one of the biggest things that they do. It's grooming. They groom the child, they find out everything they need to find out in their own way and in their own time, and then they start offering it. And, you know, what kid doesn't want free dancing lessons and free modeling lessons if they're being promised that they're going to be in a Broadway show, or, you know, if they really want a cell phone and their parents won't let them have it, or a cell phone just so they can talk to that one friend and the parents don't know they have that one cell phone so they can't check on the number. So, you know, it depends a lot on what the child wants. And kids think they know everything. Kids think that they can make their own judgment calls and it's going to be good, you know?
Right. And, you know, it's terrifying to see what's out there. It's gratifying to see the work that you do. And again, it's on We, the Women's Entertainment Channel, April 15th at 10 o'clock Eastern. Our Stephanie Good, as always, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jane. It's good to talk to you again.
We'll stay in touch. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with retired FBI Bureau Chief, current private investigator, Don Clark. Don was on a few weeks back, and he was just heading back to the Bahamas to learn the results of the inquest into the death of Daniel Smith, Anna Nicole Smith's son. And last time he was here, Don will join us in a couple of minutes to tell us about those results. And then a little later on, Aidan McAvoy will be here, and we're going to continue our investigation into the Becca McAvoy case. Aidan is Becca's real dad, biological dad, and at the time of her death was fighting for her custody. And we're going to talk more about that story. In fact, I want you to go now to scaredmonkeys.com as you're listening to this program, and you'll see that Red and others have set up a front page story at scaredmonkeys.com about this case, and we'll continue following it. This is the Dana Presser Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Presser.
Okay, we're back. My next guest was with me a few weeks back, and at the time, he was heading back to the Bahamas to learn the ruling into the coroner's inquest ruling into the death of Daniel Smith. Of course, we're talking to Don Clark, retired FBI Bureau Chief and current private investigator. Hi, Don. How are you?
Hey, Dana. How you doing?
It's been a little bit since we had you on. Of course, I said I'd have you back after the ruling came out. Tell us what happened in the Bahamas.
Well, we got back in the Bahamas and entered into the court the first day. And the judge simply charged, essentially what we would talk about here in the States, Dana, as charging the jury.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to explain that this setting is in no way really resembles that of a U.S. trial where a jury gathers all the information, weighs that information, and deliberates on it and comes back and gives a sentence of some kind, and then that's what the sentence is, unless it's appeal. It's not like that at all. These are simply seven people there who have listened to information, witness testimony, cross-examination of witnesses, examination of witnesses, and have collected information, and then they are charged with certain things that they are able to look at, and they are to go back and deliberate on it and come back with a verdict, for the lack of a better word, a verdict of some sort. We were disappointed in what the jury came back with, but I don't want to really blame the jury totally, Dana, because I think the system had some flaws in it that didn't allow the juries to exercise what we would think of over here as their sole responsibility of determining what the verdict would be.
And we'll get into it just exactly what that verdict was in a minute or two. But I want to know, Don, your thoughts on, because of the high-profile nature of this case, and you're speculating, and if you don't want to speculate, that's okay. But I'm curious on your thoughts on, with this case being so high profile, how do you think that may have affected this process? And I agree with you. I think it would be totally unfair to blame the jury themselves if you don't agree with their ruling. You have to look at the process somewhat. And I'm curious about all the media coverage and what you think it did to it.
Yeah, I think the process in and of itself, and I lived through it all the way through the whole several months, even though I think it ended up about 30 days of testimony. I think on paper, the process appears to be a legitimate process. It's not a trial jury.
Right.
Not a court of law. It's simply a fact-finding process that then should lead to some type of a court. And I and my counterparts, and I have a lawyer in the Bahamas, you know, we felt we understood that's what it's going to be. Nobody's going to come out of this necessarily as saying this person's guilty, this person's not guilty.
Right.
You know, that wasn't what we expected to come out of that. We expected the process to yield a solid verdict based on what information had been provided, what witnesses had testified, that would lead the authorities to say, we need to do more, we need to do leave it as it is, or we just don't know what took place here. And as it turns out, the verdict came back and said, well, yeah, we do know. It was basically, essentially an accident, and we'll talk about that.
You know, the media coverage that I've seen, and in fact, one of the main players in this process will be making an appearance on the Fox News Channel, actually right after my show. It all of a sudden turned the main focus of this, not so much the tragedy of Daniel dying and the fact-finding mission, to use your term, as to why he died, rather than to say that a major party involved in this was either not involved or involved. It kind of slipped focus to another person, and I think that was unfair of the media. They weren't looking at the big picture and reporting all the facts, or am I wrong?
Dana, you're not wrong, and your statements are exactly as if you and I had had this conversation before, and we haven't. I mean, it did switch focuses to a person who was, the responsibility was shifted to an individual who was not there to testify, could not testify, could not come back and refute anything that was said. And the people who were there, their testimony was something totally different than what we had heard before or what we had read before in different statements and so forth. You know, it all of a sudden made a 180-degree turn,
right,
to, I have nothing to do with this. I had nothing to do with really anything whatsoever. And yet, the person who did was accused, and I shouldn't say accused, the person that had the finger pointed at her, that was listed as the responsible party for drugs, for what drugs were taken, for what amounts of doses were taken, and so forth. All of this information, that person was not there to testify. And so, you know, and I will give the jury credit, when they heard that information, they had to be somewhat stunned. But where things seem to have broken down, Dana, is that there was no real opportunity for this jury to go back and compare factual information, testimonial information of what people had said, either in this inquest or in other judicial proceedings. Because there are clear records, and I'm not going to pull any punches. There were clear records of Howard Stern saying certain things in the court in Florida, and also certain things in a statement that the Bohemian police had taken, and that was totally different than what was said on the witness stand and other witnesses as well.
Don Clark is here, and we're talking about the recent ruling into the death of Daniel Smith in the Bahamas. There's a bigger picture here, in my opinion, Don, and I know you're representing a client, and all the parties, the major parties involved, have different interests in this. But there's a huge picture when you look at the coverage, Entertainment Tonight, all the news shows, even my poor little program here, and looking at Anna Nicole and looking at Daniel and looking at, you know, the methadone issue and the drug issue and the old videotapes, and it's just so huge, and it makes you wonder about the entertainment industry today. It seems like all we see, you go to the TMZ.coms and the other tabloid shows, all you see are these young stars and starlets that are in so much trouble because of substance abuse, whether it's prescription or otherwise. And the times have changed since when you and I were young. This story is a tragedy. People are making money off this story, and that's, I'm not saying who, and I won't say who, but people are making money off this story. But the tragic part of it is, Don, is that two people are dead. There's a young child without a mother, and here we are now. What has today's society done to contribute to this whole tragedy that we keep talking about here?
Well, you know, Dana, I don't think anybody could have said it much better than you just articulated what's really going on there. I had an old FBI agent. He was probably younger than I, but I was a young kid at that time. It's all about the money.
Yeah. You know?
And unfortunately, that's what it seems to be. It's about whatever that a particular entity can get on film, get on camera, and be able to display and show. And unfortunately for the viewing public is that they only get, and I do this business, and you are well into this business, sound bites of what somebody else has decided that they need to see or hear, and they judge and make their opinions based on that. You know, and I've seen this in this case repeatedly. People make their decisions, form decisions on people, their personalities, their characters, whether they're good or bad, on a particular soundbite that they see or a particular photograph, video that they see in one particular place, and that's unfair. For the system, you know, clearly our system is the best in the world, but it does, it's not a perfect system, and that's unfair for the system, and that's why it makes it so difficult for when we finally get something into a court setting that it is imperative that we go through a good vetting jury process to try to see if we can weed out many of those types of thoughts and ideas so that we can get a jury to work. And I really do think that in our system that it works pretty darn well in spite of all of these things. But as you so clearly articulated, that this case in my life, I've never seen anything like this that's moved to the scale that it has, and seem like certain outlooks or certain people have different views on different things, and they only paint those and paint the other parties in the absolute worst light, and sometimes whether it's true or not.
Yeah, and tonight after the program and in the weeks to come, I'll get email that say that, what do you keep bringing that bum Don Clark on your program for?
Yeah, you will.
And I'll get email saying that Don Clark is a great guy. And it's just, you know, the public's fascination with these types of cases. But now that the ruling has come out, Don, and maybe you can comment, maybe you can't, but what's next? Is there another process, an appeal? Could there still be an investigation in the Bahamas, or does this pretty much close the lid on the case there?
You know, bottom line, I think it pretty much closes the lid on this aspect of that case. Unfortunately, it really I don't know what could prop up that could come forward now. You know, and again, we've talked several times, and I go back to the initial investigation. Quite frankly, even if that jury in the Bahamas had come about and say this is an open verdict,
right,
an open verdict would mean that they just, you know know something happened. They don't think it was an accident. They don't think it was a suicide. But they just didn't see enough facts and evidence to move it forward to the next level. Even if it had come back with that, I don't see that the evidence is available in the Bahamas to be able to present to a regular court and jury to find somebody guilty of something, or to say there was no guilt here. You know, I don't see that. Unfortunately, I don't see that. And I go and I take that back to the investigation. From everything that I know about the investigation at this point, from the way that the scene was handled in the hospital, from the way that witnesses were handled, from the way that statements were taken, Dana, I don't see that the evidence is there to make a case. But the reality is, if any person takes a look at transcripts in the Bahamas, statements that taken and so forth, and analyze those properly, they will see that there are a lot of opportunities there for significant more investigation to try to find out what happens to what happened to in the death of Daniel. Now, real quickly, having said that, I still believe that there's an opportunity to take a look at what happened in the death of Anna.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that envelope should be considered totally sealed at this point. I still think that there could be some opportunities there to take a look at what really happened in the case of her death in Florida.
Well, I think everyone deserves a fair, competent investigation, no matter what the case is, and then again, the tragedy of this case. But I can't help but, and again, I'm repeating myself somewhat here, and Don Clark is with us for about the next 4 minutes, to say, you know, there's such a big picture here, a bigger picture, and, you know, there's just movies, and we won't talk about books, and there's other litigation. And there's all sorts of things, and this will go on for years and years and years until the next star or starlet, unfortunately, will come to their demise in some sort of a you know, sad, depressing, questionable way. What can we in the media do, Dawn, to be fair in something like this? There are cases where no matter what you do, you're going to get criticized for, but I think the media can do a better job when they report these cases.
Well, I think so too, Dana. And we have a lot of bright people in the media arena, but people want to surmise and come to their own conclusions and what their thoughts are. And I think if they really want to be smart about these things, you know, just try to follow the facts.
Yep.
You know, try to follow the facts instead of putting a particular different twist onto it to whatever direction that you want it to go. Let the facts lead you to wherever the end may be. That's what the court process is all about as well. So when you get away from that and start putting your own analysis of it, and let's face it, many of our media people are well liked in the public, and if it's said by some of our media people, it's gospel.
Right.
And I think we just have to be very careful about what we say that may be just suspect, you know, or it may be just a casual comment, because someone is going to take that as facts. And that's unfortunate for our total justice system. You know, if the media sticks to the facts and circumstances and not be so selective as to what pieces of soundbite, and that's what it's about, and most of the time is a soundbite. If I can get that right soundbite out there, then we can move on to the next program. Just be a little bit more responsible about what they say and what they say about people that someone may have casually said to them, and they don't even know this person. You know, this person's a nice person and has a great reputation, but all of a sudden, one bit of information comes up, and this person is terrible. And that's not a good thing for a professional media outlet to be doing.
Absolutely, and in this case, it has happened to all sides. Don Clark, you're always welcome here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the media has looked at this case and has vilified, has put on a pedestal, has done everything they can with all parties involved, and sadly this will go on for probably years with no answers. We're going to be back in just a minute here with Aidan McAvoy, and he's Becca McAvoy's real dad, and we're going to talk about that sad case. And again, go to scaredmonkeys.com and look at the case of Becca McAvoy. We talked about it last week, and we're going to continue on with that investigation this evening. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
We're back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on ScaredMonkeysRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. You know, I'm looking at a picture of Becca McAvoy here with her birthday cake, her 11-year-old birthday cake for her 11th birthday. Beautiful young girl. We started talking about Becca last week and her case. And that case, as you remember, and if you missed last week's show, make sure and go to scaredmonkeysradio.com and download it, because it's so important. And go to scaredmonkeys.com and look at the front page story that we have there. That case is so important to us now. And there's another case also that's happening. But again, the family asked that I not bring them into this. But when I see this picture and I see this story, and it's going to be difficult for me not to get somewhat emotional here this evening, I thought I would bring on tonight Aidan McAvoy. He's a police sergeant with the Chickasaw Police Department. He's been there for 22 years. He wrote me this, and I'm going to read it to you, and I'm sure you won't mind. He's been out on sick leave since the accident that took Becca's life. He had to have a complete hip replacement from the accident. Rebecca was his whole life. She was Daddy's girl. We loved to go to the beach, the flea market, and anywhere that she wanted to be with her dad. Just before the accident, she said that she wanted to go back to Disney World for the summer. She loved Orlando, Florida. This is such a difficult story. It makes me angry. It makes me sad. And we have to do what we can to help. And I thought I would bring on Aiden tonight, Becca's real dad, to talk more about it. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Thank you for coming on my program. And I know my audience and I both want to send our condolences to you for Becca. And about Becca, there's an old saying, and I've said it to many a parent on my program, and I know you as a police officer for 22 years, when you talk to families that have lost loved ones, there's something wrong when a parent buries a child. It's supposed to be the other way around. And what happened with this young girl and with your family, I'm not supposed to say hell on the radio, but I'm going to anyway. You've been to hell and back so many times now that it's got to be terribly difficult for you to stay sane, for lack of a better term. But I think that you're doing this for the love of your daughter.
Very much so.
Then when you see the system, Aiden, you've been a cop a long time. You know that I'm also a police sergeant.
Correct.
And we see the system and we look at it today and compare it to what it was when we, you know, we took our oath and put the badge on for the first time. It's a different system.
Much different.
We see the system today as a, who has the rights? Is it the person, the victim, or do we look at more loopholes to try and get the person off that's, you know, been accused of committing a crime? And you and I can both answer that question in the affirmative, that the courts are just, you know, frustrating. We look at the system to see that if there was a mandatory minimum sentence, maybe some of these guys wouldn't be on the street. You and I can discuss the court system all night, but that's not why you're here. I wanted, so we could put more of a personal aspect to this story, and if it's okay with you, I wanted to bring you on the program tonight to talk about Becca and what kind of a girl she was. Obviously, she meant a lot to you, but let's talk about Becca, the day she was born, and go from there.
Okay, she was born November 3rd, 1996. Very fine, healthy young baby, came out smiling, which I thought was kind of unusual.
You know, exactly. You don't hear that too much. Happy babies, usually when they come out, they're screaming their heads off.
Yeah, well, she came out, they marked her down, she cried, so they put her in the warmer, she had the biggest grin.
Well, I think I would, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would, too. Growing up, and I know that there was a split family issue, and I think at the time that Becca was taken, sadly, from this earth, you were in the midst of trying to regain custody of her, but while she was growing up with you, what kind of a young girl was she?
She was just... Oh, excuse me. Just full of life. Right after the divorce, the first time she asked, wait, can I come stay with you?
Right.
And I told her from that day on that whatever I could do, I would do my best to get her to come live with me. The day we found out that she'd been molested, DHR brought her to my house, and I was in custody of her from that point on.
You know, obviously, Aiden, a parent's nightmare is to hear about the death of the child. The other nightmare is to hear what you heard, that there was an accusation that she'd been raped. That must have taken all of your strength to focus just on your daughter to make sure that she was okay.
Definitely,
And I think you know where I'm going with this.
When the neighbor came and told me what she'd been told by Becca, and told me about how long they think it'd been going on, my first thought was to do the wrong thing. But
of course,
I went to my chief, Mm-hmm. He helped me do what I needed to do, what I needed to do it right.
Right.
Yeah, I thank the chief a lot for helping me out.
Well, you know, as a police officer, you see the bad, and I'm not saying this in proper English, I know, but you see the bad in the world. You see all the negatives. People don't usually come to the police with happy news, okay?
No, not usually.
No, they come to the police and with a problem, and not often do people come to the police and tell the truth. But something that we all have to realize is that when children, young children, get involved in situations and something is disclosed, the evidence and all of that will point towards the truth. And how difficult can it be for a father, Aiden, to have your 10-year-old, your 11-year-old, go through the whole grand jury process, the medical process, and you know as a cop, and I know as a cop, that medical process is something that you don't wish on anyone, but you know that for evidence, you have to go through that. That had to be terribly difficult for you and her.
That was very difficult. It was hard enough to find out that she'd been molested, but to be about molested, somebody I worked side by side with and trusted.
And the trust aspect is huge here. And the system is huge. You're off now because you were involved in the accident that took Becca from this earth. But you've now seen the system and what I'm going to use the term flaws in the system, where all of a sudden now the person who allegedly did this to Becca is trying to use a loophole to get off. You're going to, and I can tell just from talking to you for the last 10 minutes here, I can see you recovering and putting your badge and your gun back on, and you're going to want to go back to work.
I'm planning to get back to work as soon as my therapist tells me I got enough strength in my hip that I can go back to work.
You're a dedicated officer, but you also are a human being. And you and your child have gone through a terrible time. Now, and Becca is in a much better place than all of us are right now.
Oh, definitely.
But there's going to be a little bit of, and maybe there isn't, but no one could blame you if you had a little bit of distrust in the system now. Your thoughts?
It's really heartbreaking to know that somebody could be that cruel to even try to use a law like that, knowing that person can't defend himself.
Exactly.
Or how a law like it could ever get passed. There's only circumstances when there are witnesses that are deceased or have things happen they can't testify, and it's a loophole, like you said, that it should not be allowed. I mean, there's got to be exceptions in every case.
Well, this is something that, and I'm sure the prosecutor's office, everyone involved are going to do what they can to make sure that what Becca went through, not only the hurtfulness and the god-awful part of being molested, but she's already testified. And how many times do you have to put someone through a situation like this? We have to remember just who the victim was. And she was being re-victimized every time she had to retell the story. She had to have been an incredibly strong little girl to be able to go through that, Aiden.
Well, she had good counselors. And I've talked to several of them, the DA and several other people, about why do they put children back through this? I've gone through it with adults that cannot testify in a rape or an assault case, because they don't want to relieve that memory, much less a 10-year-old child.
Exactly.
And to be put in a room with 13 strangers and tell them where she was touched or what was done to her, I mean, to sit at a grown woman and watch her cry because she can't redo it, how do you expect a 10 or 11-year-old younger child to explain that?
Exactly, and that's a huge flaw in the system, because you as a sworn police officer and as a father and everyone, if we can't protect children, then there's something wrong, because they are our future. What's next, Aiden? I'm sure this, you know, you're probably not sleeping well. You know, the pain that you're going through, the heartache of this. What more can we do for you to help with this? I think this is set over till the 22nd of April, I believe.
Yes, sir. It's already set for Tuesday the 22nd. If we could get people just to call their senators, the governor, the representatives, and talk to them, we need to change the law for children 16 and under. There ought to be a different way to get them to testify with anatomical dolls or confidential sources inside with a closed-circuit TV with someone they trust. If they know they're not being coerced or being told to say anything, that they haven't got to face a bunch of strangers and tell them what goes on, but can be seen testifying of what took place in a comfortable environment so they don't feel threatened, intimidated, or embarrassed.
Yeah, it's well said, and we will do what we can to help. And I know I am working very hard, and others that work with me, to get some national attention to your story. And I will stay in touch, and we can talk again on the 22nd or after the 22nd. Aiden, again, my audience's condolences. Stay strong. You're a brother officer, and someday you and I will meet face to face. And we can talk more about this on the radio in a couple of weeks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you so very much.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Aiden McAvoy, and it is difficult, you know, and maybe I'm getting old and soft, but I'm looking at this little girl's picture here, blowing her birthday candles out, and seeing what they've gone through. What this family has gone through is just enough to you know, it tears your heart out, is what it does. And I know we have to be objective and look at things, but it's hard not to, you know, just to say things that you probably shouldn't say in something like this. We have to be professional and get answers the way that we can. I thought what I'd do is just stay on the air for another couple of minutes and see if there's anyone out there who would like to call in that's listening. If you're listening to the podcast after the fact, obviously don't call in. This is the live portion of the show. And if you would like to call in and talk about the McAvoy case, feel free now. I won't keep you on the air long. It's not toll-free, but it's 1-302-7884. 1-302-7884. If you'd like to call in and comment, you can comment on any of my guests this evening, but in particular, I thought maybe there may be some family members of Aiden McAvoy or Becca McAvoy that would like to call in and say what they feel, because we're hoping that the powers to be will come on, and these shows aren't just live. We archive them, and they're able to be listened to for, well, probably later on tonight for years. People can come in and download the show right from the webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. So this will give you an opportunity to speak your mind and to say how you feel if you don't want to and you're embarrassed to call in. Many of you have emailed, and we certainly appreciate that. But I thought I would stay on for just a couple more minutes. Again, not toll-free. I won't keep you on the air long, so it doesn't cost you much. 1-306-842-7884. Call in and say what you like about this case, because we're going to keep covering it. The 22nd of April, if not that day, the next day, we will be broadcasting here on the show the results of the court hearing, and hopefully this trial, the charges will be able to proceed with. And the argument that someone who is accused of something has the right to confront their accuser, okay, but this is a different circumstance for sure. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Jane, it's Lynn.
Hi.
I'm the McAvoy case.
Yep.
First of all, my prayers are with Aiden McAvoy. It's unimaginable.
Yep.
But I wanted to ask, and you might know this, you know, in rape case, I mean, it took decades for people to be educated.
Yep.
From police to hospitals to district attorneys on how to handle rape cases.
Yep.
And it, I don't know whether or not we have that for pedophiles.
You know, that's such a good question. And I go back to other guests that I've had on the program. Jackie Hollander is one. 25 years later, or longer, she is still fighting for the rights of the victim. But the education, the training about how to deal with someone, a pedophile, someone that a Stephanie Good will go after, or the type of, well, hell, it could be a policeman, it could be a judge, it could be a lawyer, it could be a doctor, it could be anyone. No, I think we need to do a lot more, because there's so much information that is out there that's wrong, and we don't see enough coverage of it. At least I don't think so. We don't see enough of these stories. I can't figure out for the life of me why the mainstream media, why the big boys haven't grabbed the story and ran with it. It's huge.
Yeah, it's certainly something they would take on. And so we're sending emails to try to make that happen. It just seems to me that they're, like, listening to the details of this case, it seems as if there are people in the system that don't know how to handle these cases.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more.
There needs to be some standards set.
And this isn't the only case. There are others. In fact, two in the same county, in the same city. And again, we're only talking about one, but they're both so sad. But we're focusing on this one. And I thought I would bring on the dad tonight, and it's got to be difficult. And I really appreciate him coming on to talk about this, because we don't hear a lot about the victim. We hear a lot about the case and the complexities and the loopholes and things like that, but we don't hear a lot about what kind of a child was Becca. And like I say, I'm looking at her picture right now at her 11th birthday party, and it's hard not to to get the old eyes welled up. But anyway, I appreciate your call.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. You know, and that's so true, and the group of Scared Monkeys and my other listeners are always right on top of things, because how important is it to be trained to know how to deal with these pedophiles, to know how to deal with, you know, the rape cases. And when you start dealing with a rape case with a young child that is killed before the trial goes ahead, there has to be a better way of doing it. Okay, about 3 minutes, we have time to sneak in one more phone call. 1-306-842-7884. 1-306-842-7884. And I remind you that if you're listening after the fact, there's no sense calling in. That's just during the live portion of the program. And we do appreciate calls. I don't take them often, just now and then when we can get them. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm Rebecca's cousin, Angela Dismuke.
Hi.
Hi. I've been helping my sister Rhonda post stuff on the internet for this case and everything.
Right.
I was actually with her older sister when they found out. Her older sister called me, and she said, Angela, if I have ever needed you, I need you now.
Right.
But please come here. Mm. And when I got to her house, actually to Aiden's house, she was in her front seat crying. She told me that her sister had been molested. And that, anyhow, they just, she was tore up, and Becca was inside, and Becca was really quiet about it. She
right.
was embarrassed about it, more or less. And to watch her run around and play beforehand and see how she was after everything happened, it was just like she had been marked.
Yep.
And she wanted, you know, just to forget about it.
Right.
But at the same time, she knew that in the back of her mind, she needed to do something about this so it don't happen to nobody else.
Absolutely. And like I said to her dad, and I've said many times, Becca's in a much better place now than all of us are, and she is doing it because we're going to keep working on this until we can.
Oh, yeah. We're fighting for her.
So we can get some answers.
Right. And I want to see this man, Bob Engel, put behind the bars. I want to see him put under the justice system. I think that our laws should be much tougher on these people, these pedophiles, who think they can go around and take little girls' innocence, and little boys for that matter,
right,
and think that they can walk the streets and get away with it. I just don't see how they can lay their head down at night and sleep.
Yeah.
And to see this man's face, I saw how he was with Becca. Like, I actually had a... go to the police office with her sister to take some stuff up to him, and before all this came out, and to see how he was with Becca, he was trying to be all nice and stuff, and just this big misleading situation to the family.
Right.
And in the back of our mind, there was something about this man I just didn't trust. I just had an uneasy feeling, you know. And he just, to see his face sickens me. It turns my stomach. And for a child to have that image in her head
right.
is a total nightmare.
Absolutely.
I can't even look at him for 10 minutes without having an uneasy feeling.
Well, and the nightmare continues, but we will do what we can to help. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's see here. I got time for one more quick call. 1-306-842-7884. And yes, I guarantee you we'll continue following the case of Becca McEvoy and others that have to deal with this same sort of circumstance, and we can only hope, and we've talked to the analysts and the DAs and the lawyers and everyone, we can only hope that the proper ruling will come down, and what's the old saying? Justice will be served. That Becca, again, is in a much better place than all of us, and that the courts will have a special place for the person who allegedly raped and sodomized her. This is a heartbreaking story, and make sure and go into the radio page here to listen to the show. It'll be available a few hours from now, tomorrow, whenever you can. Pass it on to your friends, government people, other news organizations. We need O'Reilly, Greta, Nancy, I don't care who. 48 hours, you name it, somebody needs to grab the story and run with it, because it is huge. I believe if we cannot protect the kids, Stephanie Good is out there protecting the kids, police officers are protecting kids, teachers, everyone, then I don't know who can. One last call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Dana, this is Rhonda Wheeler.
Hi, Rhonda. Nice to have you back on.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to call and say that we have been so just living our lives in this total nightmare.
Right.
And we miss Becca so much. And all we want is justice for her.
Yep.
And due to this Crawford versus Washington stuff, then he may walk free. But this man is an alleged repeat offender.
Right.
And other children will be harmed if he's let back into society. And Becca, everything she went through will be in vain.
Right.
And we can't allow that. We have to just put a plea out there. Please, somebody in the media, help us. Please help us, because we've already lost our baby girl, and we just can't go through the nightmare of her accuser walking free and another family having to go through the literal hell that our family has been through. It is not fair to her memory, and it is not fair to our family. We loved her so much, and we've been through literal hell, and we just need help. Please, someone, anybody in the media that can take this case and help us to find a way where everything that she has said can be used in the court system. Somebody that knows Crawford versus Washington, please find an exception and help us to get justice for this precious little girl that's no longer here. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to get emotional, but...
It's hard not to.
It's so hard.
It's hard not to. Rhonda, I will stay in touch and do everything I can to help.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much for all you've done for us.
All right, I'll stay in touch. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, if that doesn't, if that doesn't say it, I don't know what does. The emotionality, the heartache is just so huge. It's just so huge that, come on, O'Reilly, pick up this story. Pick up the story and broadcast it. I'll send you everything I've got. Greta, there's excellent news reporters in Mobile. We've had them on the program that can run this story. It's huge. Listen to these families, okay? Listen to these families. There's tragedy all over. I know there are so many sad stories across the world, North America, but this is one that touches close to home. It is huge. We fought and we've done everything we can to get the mandatory minimum sentences to Jessica's Law, but that's not enough. We have a huge case here that needs help. It needs national coverage. The local coverage, we've done what we can here and we're going to do more at Scared Monkeys, but we need more. Come on, you guys, please help. You can hear it in the voices of the family and those that care, and I know out there you do care. My name's Dana Pretzer. This has been the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Thank you for listening. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.